Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Welcome back to the show, team. My name's Amelia, and today we're having an episode of just me talking again because it has been a couple of months since my first podcast about a diabetes diagnosis. And I thought since so much has changed in those couple of months, it would be good to do a follow-up. So here I am doing a follow-up. We're also coming up to International Diabetes Day, and I am going to try and do a special episode for that because why not? But this one is just, there's a couple of things that I forgot to mention in the last podcast, which I've been feeling a tiny bit bad about. And I just wanted to, say hello. And there's been a pretty steep learning curve, which has been really interesting, also really overwhelming. And I thought I'd share some of the fun facts that I've learned in the last couple of months, because what is a podcast except the opportunity to talk about fun facts? And do some myth busting as well. And I might wrap this up a little bit more coming into Christmas because, the people with different illnesses in your life often need a little bit more support coming into Christmas. So just to recap on some of the stuff that I forgot to highlight in the first episode, and that was, the first episode on this topic of being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and around age of 35, is my little life tip is if you're going to the doctor and you suspect it's going to be bad news, take someone with you. And in my case, I took my partner with me. And I think that was a freaking excellent idea because it meant that there was someone else listening, which is always good because, if you're getting a significant piece of information about your life given to you, you're probably going to zone out a part because, oh my goodness. But also it means that you then don't have to go home and tell them bad news. The bad news directly comes from the doctor. So definitely a cop-out, but also very effective. So yes, if you can take someone with you to really any medical appointments, and having someone else come with me to my medical appointment since then has made a huge difference. Yeah, it's always just great to have another person's perspective as you're going through something new. I realized afterwards also that I completely forgot to thank a whole lot of people. I had an amazing diabetes educator who came and visited me in hospital. She's an absolute legend, and I've been working with her since, to improve my education on diabetes. Also an absolute legend of a dietitian. Both of them have really good senses of humor, which makes a huge difference, and are just incredibly practical and realistic people, which is really important when you're talking about something that is, it's not a condition, it's not like a broken leg where you're going to have it for a couple of weeks and maybe look at a little bit of rehab, but this is sort of like a complete life shift for the rest of your life. So the advice that medical professionals give you, having them give that to you in the context of this is huge and life-changing, is really helpful. And having that delivered with a touch of humor is really good too. If you feel like it and want to go back through some of the Avid research in my personal socials, you'll see some cartoons depicting some of the stories that I particularly enjoyed. Yeah. I've also thought quite a bit about my packing list for hospital, because as someone with type 1 diabetes, you are more likely to end up back in hospital, just particularly if you have high blood sugars for a long period of time, which can be caused by things like really bad stress and sickness, and a whole lot of things can cause high blood sugars that can result in the ketones coming back and, needing to go to hospital to have an IV drip of saline to flush that out. So I've now got my little hospital bag ready to go, including earplugs and eye mask to cope with that sort of feeling of being on a very noisy aeroplane. Oh, and chili sauce, just to make the food a bit more palatable. Anyhow, so just a couple of things that I neglected to mention earlier. Now, I wanted to, I guess, that when I did that podcast, it was quite all very fresh, and I probably didn't know how much I didn't know. And, you know, I now am getting an inkling of how much I don't know and realizing that it is a lot. Now, for those of you who don't know me, I've sort of like always identified more as a physics kind of person. I really enjoyed physics and maths in high school. And there was a time when I wanted to be a physicist. And with the silly attitudes that a teenager can have, I sort of thought that that meant I couldn't be interested in biology as well. And as a result, I didn't study biology beyond year 10. And I have to say, never in my life have I regretted that decision more. I really wish that I had studied at least year 11, maybe year 12 bio, and I had some idea how it all works, your body, and how sort of cells function. Because, yeah. Yep, I was sitting there reading an article one Sunday morning trying to understand like how exercise interacts with type 1 diabetes, because it's quite common for people to have hypos. That's like a significant drop in blood sugar, basically, where your organs and particularly brain sort of not getting enough sugar to keep functioning. So basically starving your organs, not good. And that's where like jelly beans and the sugar, the quick sugars come in. But I was reading up on like why it is that exercise kind of like boosts the insulin and kind of makes it more active, I guess. That's the wrong word, but makes it more. I think about it like where you drive over a mushroom in a Super Mario, like Mario Kart, and it's just like a boost. You didn't necessarily add anything, but the exercise, you know, makes the insulin more insulin-y. And I've been curious about why. And I was chatting to a friend who just happens to be a cardiovascular researcher, and she was like, oh, it's something to do with like your muscles consume glucose differently to your organs. And so I went down a rabbit hole of trying to like read some scientific articles about why this was happening. And it's something to do with the GLUT or GLUT4 receptors. From what I can see, they kind of like use insulin more efficiently. Would love to talk to someone who can articulate this. But I was just so frustrated with myself for not having a stronger background in biology to be able to sort of like get up to speed a bit faster on how all these things work, because I am overly interested in poking the system and seeing how does it work. So exercise has been one of those things that's been absolutely fascinating. And at the moment, I'm thinking about it as like different kinds of extreme sports. So basically, the fresher the insulin, the rapid acting insulin is in my system, the easier it seems to supercharge it and like potentially result in a hypo. And so about within an hour of having insulin, and this is even with like matching it up with the correct amount of carbs, but an hour out from having insulin, things like cutting out a sewing pattern on the kitchen floor can be really extreme sports and result in having a hypo. That took me a little while to accept that that correlation was indeed the case in this particular one. Even just like taking the dog for a walk when the insulin is quite fresh can like result in hypo. 2 hours out, things like gardening, weeding, particularly anything involving upper body, comes to the conclusion that upper body is slightly less efficient and therefore it goes through glucose a lot faster. That's like more likely to result in hypo. And then as you get further and further out from having the insulin, and it seems to have a tail of about 4 or 5 hours, you can sort of do more and more athletic or physical things with less and less of a risk. So yes, it's the interaction between exercise and blood glucose has been really interesting, and having a continuous glucose monitor, and so being able to see almost in real time, there's a bit of a lag, but almost in real time being able to see the impact of doing an activity on your blood glucose is really quite fascinating. Obviously, it can be a little bit overwhelming, and it's really easy to beat yourself up about like your numbers going up and you didn't want them to, or going down and you didn't want them to. But that's all just, you know, there's also a huge mental element. This it's definitely not all physical. But yeah, so exercise, those GLUT4 receptors, one day I'll go back and read that article and hopefully understand it a little bit more. But, you know, as I'm developing more, you know, understanding of what my body does in relation to having insulin, doing exercise, eating different foods, yeah, it's been quite fascinating to develop that deeper understanding of how my body works. It's quite something because we all know that exercise is important, right? And we all know that eating a healthy diet, however it is defined, is important. Ideally eating low GI, you know, high vegetables, that sort of stuff, helps you feel full longer and all those sorts of things are good. It is amazing how different you consider these things when you can actually see the trace of the impact and have a metric, like an actual number, that shows you the impact of doing that thing. And the other big one as well, actually, is stress and seeing my blood sugars go up and up and up when I get stressed, and then being able to bring it back down as I like decrease the stress. All these things that you know and you've been told like a billion times in your life are important to manage, and you should do this and you should do that. It's surprising how much more effective it is when you've got that metric that sort of like you really should do something about that. Haven't quite worked out how to apply that and what that actually means for my life, but definitely things like trying to avoid stress and trying to manage and recover from stress a lot better is something that I'm thinking about. But yes, quite fascinating how our bodies actually work. But yeah, so back to it, the challenges, like they change week to week. So as you learn one new thing and you turn that into a good habit, you know, there's a new thing that you need to learn. And obviously being someone who just like wants to learn it all and just like adapt it all, I do have a habit of slightly overdoing, you know, picking up too much information and overwhelming myself. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. So the purpose of telling you that is just be real patient with people who are going through entirely new diagnoses and try to learn about it, because it can be really like quite overwhelming. So we've been learning a huge amount about food. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but like carb counting is a really big part of like a successful management of type 1 diabetes. So being able to match the amount of insulin that you have to the amount of carbohydrates that you're eating. Carbohydrates are turned really easily into glucose in our body system. And some people will tell you that that's a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing because your brain really likes glucose and you want to give your brain easy food. We don't want our brain having to work for food. It's a horrifying thought. I want my brain to focus on being a brain, not on like trying to get, you know, energy out of stuff. So carbohydrates, you know, they come in a whole like spectrum from super fast like juice and glucose liquids all the way down to like really slow, complex, high fiber grains and things. So yeah, carbohydrates exist on this spectrum. And one of my favorite things that I've been saying to myself is all sugars are carbohydrates, but not all carbohydrates are sugars, although they kind of end up as glucose sugars. Yeah, kind of like sharks and fish. So I personally have chosen not to go for like a low carb diet. There is a number of like a lot of people who choose that as part of their diabetes management. But for me, that would just like rip a huge amount of joy out of my existence. And that's not what I want to choose to do. So instead, my focus has been on learning about GI or glycemic index and how to create meals that basically are low GI, although in some cases it's less that it's low GI and it's more that you want the, or I want the energy from the food that I'm eating to match the release of the insulin. So I want my food energy to be releasing nice and evenly, and that matching my insulin's activity like profile. And to do that, like there's innately low GI foods that you can eat, things like pearl couscous or basmati rice. There's like potatoes that have been tweaked to be low GI, that sort of stuff. So there's those kinds of things. And you can also take a higher GI food like cake and add fats or proteins to them to slow down the digestion and decrease that sort of like sugar spike you might get. So creating sort of healthy, balanced meals of like carbohydrates combined with some fats, combined with some proteins, and ideally a bunch of fiber, and that will help slow down digestion, the release of that energy that comes from the food, and like decrease the blood sugar spike. So you get like a nice, chill little like blood sugar glucose track. One of the things that, you know, you might not realize, because if you're a normal person who's never looked at their blood glucose, why would you? But there's a handful of foods that are really high in fat and often high in protein as well, that so low GI, the energy released from them lasts longer than the insulin, and you can end up with a blood glucose rise afterwards. So things like pizza, nachos, kebabs, you can see a theme here, burgers with chips, chicken parma, all those meals are very high in fat, fairly high in protein, and like the duration of digesting them, extracting the energy from them, can outlast insulin. And that's where you need to start looking at like extended dosing or split dosing. So taking some of the insulin for that meal at the beginning and some partway through, so that you sort of like capture all that energy. Yeah. So that's been a learning curve. But you've never had to think that hard about pizza before. Had to look at a piece of pizza and be like, are you worth two injections? And trust me, there's some pizza out there that is not worth two injections. But there's definitely some pizza that is totally worth it. Yeah, so honestly, the food stuff has been so fascinating. There's sort of simplistic ways that people be like, oh, you know, healthy eating for diabetes is just like healthy eating in general, which is sort of true. But you could also eat like a diet that's really good for your diabetes. It's also like horrendous for your cardiovascular health, because things like cheese and processed meat in general, doesn't have any carbohydrates in it. And these things are definitely known to increase your blood cholesterol. So just saying, anything with diet is complex. But yeah, it's been really, really fascinating, and learning about how different foods are digested in your body, what things have carbohydrates and don't have carbohydrates. It's definitely not always intuitive. Like, there's more carbohydrates in a carrot than pumpkin. That just blows my mind. Yeah, so yes, there's like a whole world of low carb, low sugar. Personally, not for me. I like eating my carbohydrates quite, yep. From like a personal perspective, there's a huge amount of grief from all the things you've lost and all this like stuff that you have to do now. Personally, I found that my brain is just so full. There is so many things to be considering almost all the time, and it's really hard to take a break. A whole lot more decisions that need to be made, and you know, you have to work quite hard to make good decisions quite often. And then, you know, frustration that, you know, just a couple of months ago I could eat a snack without having to think about it, and now, you know, I have to put in a bit of effort. Most times of the day it takes about 20 minutes for the insulin to kick in, so that means if I don't want to have a blood sugar spike, I need to have insulin about 20 minutes beforehand, before eating the snack, and then eat the snack. And trust me, that sort of like decreases the joy in snacks quite a lot. Planned like bag of chips just isn't quite the same as like an impulse eaten bag of chips. It's quite hard to quantify, but it's a thing. Yeah, so I really miss having more brain space, more energy to like think about a wider range of things, and being able to snack without planning. There were good times that I didn't really appreciate it. But at the same time, you know, you gain this insight into how your body works, which for me is definitely a perk and quite fascinating. It's quite a strange collaboration to be working on. Like, Our hypothesis at the moment is that my pancreas is still producing a bit of insulin. My insulin needs in general are lower than what would be expected for my body weight if my pancreas was doing nothing. And so that's referred to as honeymoon period, which is interesting. So I'm trying to sort of collaborate with my pancreas. My liver's your liver's doing stuff too, but your liver's doing stuff. And we have like a handful of tools. We can see our glucose levels. We can eat food. We can do exercise and we can take insulin. And when you think about like the complexities of human body and the delicacy of the system that's developed and like we're trying to get involved and help out using three pretty blunt tools, you know, it's quite a fascinating thing to try and do is, you know, supporting that organ. There you go. That's my 30-minute timer to remind me that I need to eat breakfast because in the morning, insulin takes a lot longer to kick in. So it's about 30 to 45 minutes that I need to dose before I get to eat breakfast, which is a long time. So now we're just looking for the drop. But yeah, so you're like in some ways attempting to be an organ, but in my case also collaborating with an organ that's kind of like on its way out, or at least some of the cells with it, that organ are on their way out. I was reading a very interesting article in Nature the other day about, you know, there's this whole like research field into extending the honeymoon period and keeping your pancreas producing insulin for longer, which is a lovely idea, right? You know, it sounds nice. And the general understanding is that the reason your pancreas is producing less insulin is because the T cells from your immune system have gone and attacked the beta cells in your pancreas, and they're the cells that produce the insulin, right? Sounds good. It's an autoimmune condition. Your immune system has like, you know, misidentified beta cells as a threat, takes them out. This article used the word dysfunction like three times in one sentence, which is fantastic, but actually suggests that your beta cells are somewhat provoking. That might be a bit of a like anthropomorphized word, but like part of the problem, and that the beta cells are actually really frazzled. It's probably like they're inflamed and stressed, and it's not necessarily that just the immune system has misidentified the beta cells as a threat, but also that the beta cells are kind of, let's just run with provoking them. And I find that really interesting. It might not. I mean, nothing's as simple as like a couple of sentence paragraph, but yeah, sounds like there's some interesting research happening. So as a result, I don't feel sorry for my pancreas, but I'm also wondering how much, you know, it has brought this on itself and probably all through me being overly stressed. But yeah, so many fascinating things. The other thing, like I've been rambling for a little while, but I just would like to address a couple of misconceptions and myths that I've come across so far, and I'm sure there'll be more of them, but there's a lot actually. But so one is just that all diabetes is the same thing. No, type 1, type 2, gestational, they're different things. I'm not quite sure why they're all called diabetes, because they're caused by very different things, and how you treat them to some extent is quite different as well. It isn't possible to manage type 1 diabetes just with lifestyle and dietary interventions. Losing weight, eating less sugar won't make your pancreas start producing insulin. It might help your general health on average, but it's not going to bring back those beta cells. There's a bit of misconception about high blood sugar versus low blood sugar, and we come across like this quite a lot. My partner gets confused occasionally as well, because I think it's just counterintuitive. So high blood sugar, your blood is too sweet. That's too much sugar in it. To treat high blood sugar, exercise, insulin. Do not treat high blood sugar with more sugar. It's just not a thing because you're too sweet. This is obviously oversimplified. Low blood sugar, you're not sweet enough. Your organs are not getting access to the energy that they need to keep functioning. Therefore, you need to add sugar to the system. It is so common for people to confuse those two things. And I think it's just like, it just is the wrong way around in our heads, right? But low blood sugar, you're not sweet enough. You need some sugar. High blood sugar, you're too sweet. You need some insulin, some exercise, or like to decrease that. Yeah, very, very common misconception, that particular one. The other misconception, and I cannot for the life of me work out how to bust this one because it is so difficult, but type 1 diabetes is not a condition that you can just set and forget. It is not like a handful of other illnesses where you just need to stop eating a certain food group and take a medication and you'll be fine. It is a condition that you need to constantly manage. And whilst you can take breaks to some extent, there is constant decisions to be made about when to take your insulin, how much insulin you're taking for that particular meal, what, like, whether you can exercise, at what times you can exercise, like whether or not you have access to foods that will get you out of a hyper or low blood sugar situation, you know, like where have you injected in your body recently? You don't want to inject in the same spot twice. How your blood sugar is responding to caffeine, stress, like if your blood sugar is lower than 5, you're not legally allowed to drive. So there's, you know, decisions to be made around driving and what you need to do to be safe to drive. Yeah, there's constant decisions to be made and very well-meaning advice along the lines of, oh, just don't think too hard about it. You'll be fine. It's very sweet, but it's not actually practical advice. To be healthy long-term and short-term, you do need to be relatively engaged in what your body's doing, how your body is responding to food, exercise, insulin, and all the stimulations around you. So I think just that it is constant, and there's plenty of other chronic conditions out there that are also constant, but I think that's the hardest myth to dispel, is that like all you need to do is take your medicine and stop eating cake, you're fine, and can definitely still eat the cake, but the amount of medicine you take, when you take the medicine, etc., that's not certain yet. Well, yeah, so just a couple of misconceptions, but I can actually feel my insulin is starting to kick in now. I've hit 8 millimoles, so like my blood sugar was 8 while I've been talking to you, and it's gradually starting to drop to 7.8, and I need to go have breakfast, because otherwise I'll start the day with a low blood sugar, which isn't fun. So thank you so much for joining me on this journey. If you have questions, if you're curious about things, let me know. I might go into a bit more of the tech stuff that we're doing later, but yeah, I hope you're all having a great day, and you know, don't forget to high-five your pancreas because it's doing an awesome job. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee. Head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.